Hey there, Absolution Network fans! It is I, Thomas Primetime Mattis, a.k.a. CM Jew, here with a little news flash for you guys before we start today's show. And that news flash is a very big one, as I'm proud to announce that the Absolution Network will be doing several panels at Anime Next 2015, which will take place on June 12th to the 14th in Somerset, New Jersey. One of the best damn anime conventions out there today. I highly suggest it's just always been a great experience for us. John would be doing his Toku panel, which, again, that's where I first saw him, and he does a great job, and you know, he brings that same enthusiasm to his videos. It's a great panel, so check the Toku panel that he does. It'll be on there. And, of course, I will have not one, not two, not three, but four outstanding panels to showcase at Anime Next. Number one, the Toonami Celebration panel, which I've done for the past 2 years at Anime Next. The panel, it's just, I mean, get there early because the panel room fills up and we just have fun at that panel. So the Toonami Celebration panel, we're going to have a brand new Tokyo SOS Godzilla panel, also the success of last year's Godzilla panel I did. This year we're going to be doing something fun to where we're sort of going to have like a March Madness like Battle Royal and have a big discussion about who would win in fights and just have fun. You know, you're going to see hopefully, you know, contests like maybe Godzilla versus King Kong. What would happen if Godzilla faced, you know, for instance, Japanese Godzilla faced the new 2014 American Godzilla. You know, what would happen if Godzilla faced Gamera? You know, these are just some of the discussions I hope to have during this panel. It's going to be fun. Look forward to that. After a year absence, I can't wait to bring back my American anime panel entitled American Animation and Anime, sort of. It's really a look into something I've always talked about, which is, you know, my Walt Disney theory of animation categorization, where I'll show basically evidence that America does anime. You know, we'll look back at like Walt Disney, like Sleeping Beauty and Batman the Animated Series, Batman Beyond, 2011 Thundercats, and some other stuff to showcase that indeed America has done anime. And last but not least, a new panel I've come up with called Urbame. Urbame is a very unique panel I've thought up where I'm basically going to take you into how the urban culture of America has a huge influence on why anime became popular here in the States. I'm going to showcase how pop culture what pop culture becomes popular is because of the urban community in America, and how that led to anime becoming popular, and how maybe urban anime fans look at anime a bit different than sort of the classic otaku may look at it. So these are some of the panels that will be showcased at Anime Next that the Absolution Network is doing. I hope you all check them out. Right now there are no time for the panels. As they are announced and as I know them, we will, of course, let you know where you can find us. And, of course, come check us out. Come support the Absolution Network. And until then, stay golden.
I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company. And I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
He's gonna die for it.
hey there, everybody. It is IC, and the best Jew in the world here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 45, and on this episode, it's the annual time of the year where it's post-WrestleMania. For some, it's WrestleMania blues. For some, the heights are just as high as WrestleMania. And that depends on the pay-per-view. And this week, we go back to 2003 to see if the Backlash that featured the debut of Bill Goldberg in the WWE hits those WrestleMania blues or those WrestleMania heights. That's all right here on CMG's Wrestling Reviews. And whoo, do we have a lot to talk about. Of course, since my last podcast, the epic 2+ hour podcast, you know, of course, has been featuring Shin Tiger Kuro and TWK, where we talked about both WrestleMania 31 and WrestleMania 22. I probably, at some point in the future, will do another review of WrestleMania 31, mind you. I mean, and that could pretty much be, I think, the thing for... mind you, we do short little reviews and talk about, but WrestleMania is such a special podcast that going forward with this show, I think that's something that's going to be an annual thing. We'll get sort of the instant, like, you know, weeks or whatever after it happens review of it, and then there'll be sort of one of those things to where for those WrestleManias is something where I'll do it alone, like, okay, I've had a couple years to sit back and let it dwell and see where it led. Because, you know, especially if you've seen what I've done, I've really done a lot of, I mean, some of the most recent stuff I've done, I'd have to look back and see what the most recent thing I've done is. But I don't think I've done anything post-2010. Mostly because I wanted to sit back and just let it dwell. You know, I wanted to review WrestleMania 29, for instance, because I love that WrestleMania, but I've sort of sit back and let it dwell. Because you want to give it a couple years, because it's fun to look back and see, where did everything lead after this? You know, that's sort of the fun of, like, for instance, today's review. As I made mention, the biggest thing for this Backlash was Bill Goldberg's debut. At least as far as what the pay-per-view was promoting. And it's fun to see, okay, where did he go? You know, and that led up to, again, because we did basically WrestleMania 20, which was in 2004. This debut would lead to that last match, which we reviewed about a month ago. So, you know, it's interesting to see where it all leads. And I also find it interesting, that's the big thing of this pay-per-view, and yet you had really one of the first big matches and really one of the big moments in which the man, the face that runs the place, John Cena, stepped up. Because, it's him and Brock Lesnar for the WWE title. I think everybody forgets that he had... That was his first WWE title shot. So it's going to be really interesting. And that's one of those things. So just look forward to, you know, me probably reviewing WrestleMania 31 again further. And of course, thank you for all those who helped make WrestleMania season this past year just absolutely wonderful for CMG. Of course, I'm talking with Corey. I'm, of course, talking TWK, Shin Tiger, Maddie J, Hairball, all of you guys who came on. I thank you very much. First of all, I would want to give a shout-out to Corey, because Corey stuck with me for, like, over 2 hours talking. We talked build-up to WrestleMania, and we talked WrestleMania 3, like, extensively, and it was amazing. Thank you to Maddie J and to Hairball, both who were battling colds on the day we talked WrestleMania 15. And, of course, TWK, Shin Tiger, a lot because, you know, that little backstory there, we were supposed to review on Monday, but because of Passover and family affairs, I had to move it to Tuesday. And so they were willing to, you know, allow that to happen and still came on, so I'm very thankful. By the way, what a past 3 weeks it's been. By the way, I'm recording this on Wednesday just for prosperity reasons, so you understand. The past three Raws, I think, have just been absolutely amazing. It's been the best three Raws in a row that we've had in a long, long time. I mean, first of all, you had the night after WrestleMania. Again, to quote T-Dub, for once, having a WrestleMania to have a hard time to follow. But damn, did they follow it. A Raw that was a bit of a downgrade, but still very entertaining, still very good. And the same thing with this Raw. Though I could understand why some people would probably be disappointed, just because I think WWE built a lot of hype for this past Monday night. You know, from Finn Balor sending that Twitter picture of him on the Raw set, you know, to, you know, Michael P.S. Hayes sending out a tweet. And, you know, in those instances, I don't mind it, because I gotta give it up to WWE using social media and using the tricks of the trade to get people hyped and get people watching. Because it is that time of year where people do fall off. And so, you know, you want to keep people watching. And if you understand TV production, you know, there are some things you have to understand. They're going to do what they need to do to keep people watching. And if you can get people hyped for watching the program, even if they're somewhat disappointed, me personally, if I was a producer, I'd rather have people be slightly disappointed that it wasn't everything they expected than for them to, like, well, why am I going to care or watch it? It's, you know, after WrestleMania season. You know, you want people to be hyped. Because if people are hyped, that means they have a vested interest in your product. That being said, this past Monday night was no slouch. I mean, started off with an epic match between Wade Barrett and John Cena. Again, Cena featuring his springboard stunner, which, you know, it's very interesting. Stone Cold on his podcast, I believe his family-friendly version, addressed you. I'm sure he got several emails. I know this because I'm actually one. About a week and a half ago, he put out a tweet saying, send your emails here for people who want to know. And I know I, for one, sent an email saying, hey, Steve, I gotta know, what do you think about Cena's springboard stunner? Mind you, he makes mention of, I guess his one beef with it is, he thinks it should be a finisher instead of a setup, and that it doesn't do anything as just a setup. And, you know, I can see that, but I also see it as a very good setup. You know, the stunner is just a sunny move, and it's like, it's just a whiplash effect, and then you, it's, you know, again, its name, it's a stunner, so it stuns you, and that allows for, again, the FU / attitude adjustment. So I see it both ways, though I would like to see it eventually used as a finisher. I think it would be a great finisher, especially if John Cena is going to be using it from here on out. You know, the springboard stunner, that's the speed move that comes out of nowhere, and then you have sort of the big setup power move that can also come out of nowhere with the attitude adjustment. You know, the best wrestlers always have multiple finishers. So he can have three finishers. I guess it's really up to what corporate wants, but, you know, I've been begging for wrestlers to have three finishers in the WWE game for a long time. But, hey, what do I know? So that's very interesting, but you had that match. You had the Dolph Ziggler-Neville match. And there may be some people who are angry that he's lost the past two matches, but god damn it, he has put on some wonderful matches. I'm personally a person that sits there and says that it's not about wins and losses. And I agree, it's not about wins and losses. I know other officials say that. It's about the performance. And if you're telling a great story and you're amazing and wowing crowds, you're eventually going to get those wins and you're eventually going to get that storyline where you win titles and everything. And goddamn it, is Neville putting the work. I mean, I think everybody was shocked. I jumped out of my seat. I have to sit here and say this. This past Monday night, I was actually watching Raw more intently than I was before because I was, like, recording everything that was happening in regards to, okay, this match is this, and this, and they have this segment, and then reporting basically every commercial that was on for a product for school. But when that moment happened where he did the 450 splash from 4 feet up off the guardrail, I jumped at him. I see him like, what? What? Are you effing kidding me? So that was pretty amazing. I like the fact, by the way, that we've had 3 solid Raws in a row, because like I said, I think it's very good for the WWE. I think it's going to help keep people. I think the people who maybe have stuck around after such a tremendous WrestleMania, for once, may make... Because there usually is a fall-off of people watching WWE after WrestleMania. Hopefully, maybe some of them stuck around this time. And, you know, if this is what the WWE can be going forward, and there's going to be some downtimes throughout the year, but if a majority of the year can be like this, I don't think people can call WWE a loser by the end of it in regards to being, you know, the worst promotion. Because right now, WWE is showcasing itself as the best promotion. So hopefully this is good news going forward. And of course, we have Extreme Rules, which is being promoted. I know I admit that I'm a John Cena mark, but God damn it, how can you not be excited if you're an old school wrestling fan for a chain match? I know there's going to be no blood, which, by the way, if there is blood, somebody has to give points to WWE for finally allowing blood, but I know there probably isn't. But the fact of the matter is that they're going with a chain match, an absolutely brutal match. You know, I give props to WWE for. So John Cena, Rusev, and a chain match. We have an official Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins for the title in a steel cage match where the RKO is banned. I wonder if it's going to be pinfall only or if they'll allow escape. You know, and you know the funny thing about that is, I'm like, as that whole extreme decision was happening this past Monday night, I'm like, okay, Seth Rollins is probably going to go first, and he's probably going to ban the RKO. And that's when, you know, I knew that Orton would probably suggest something that would require him, allow him to win, not by RKO. In other words, like a table match, or a ladder match, or, you know, a steel cage match. So you have that. We know there's an IC title match between Wade Barrett and Daniel Bryan. We don't know how extreme that may be. And I think that's it. I'm pretty sure there's probably going to be a tag team match. I think it'll be a bit too early to have the Lucha Dragons challenge. Cesaro and Kid, I would like to see them maybe defend against another team right now, though I just don't know who that team would be. So it's going to be interesting going forward. Even though Paige is scheduled to face Nikki, I think that's going to slowly turn into Naomi facing Nikki for the title. And it's going to be interesting to see how that goes because, of course, for those who know the backstory, Paige is going off to star in Santa's Helpers with The Miz. God help her. So Extreme Rules is shaping out. Yeah, it's going to be interesting because last year's Extreme Rules was really, really good with that, you know, Cena-Wyatt steel cage match and the that holy shit Daniel Bryan Kane match where, you know, he tried to kill him with a forklift. Huzzah! But, you know, speaking of forklifts, well, if we were doing Judgment Day 2003 like I already have done, that would be a great transition. And I think I probably did make that transition last year. But, no, we're talking about Backlash 2003, and why don't you say we get into it, shall we? So, ladies and gentlemen, a little tale of the tape. Backlash 2003, which took place on April 27, 2003, at the Worcester Centrum in Worcester, Massachusetts, or however you pronounce that state. because I have marble mouth. I've become Wade Barrett, which means apparently TWK is going to tell people to stop pushing me. But anyways, it's presented by Castro GTX, as was the norm for a lot of pay-per-views during this time period, featuring the brands of Raw and SmackDown. With an attendance of 10,000, your commentators are for Raw, Coach, and The King, and for SmackDown, Taz and Michael Cole. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Backlash 2003. About, of course, the dark match that happened on Heat as Scott Steiner defeated Rico. Because, yeah, can you imagine Rico defeating Scott Steiner? I can't. But our first match of the evening was for the WWE Tag Team Championship as Team Angle, Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas, faced Los Guerreros of Eddie and Chavo Guerrero. Wow, what a match. This is just a great match from start to finish. Two great tag teams facing each other and just lighting the place on fire. Los Guerreros, this was at their peak as, you know, baby faces, mind you. And actually, this would also lead into probably one of their best storylines, or as part of their best storylines. The whole stealing the titles and, of course, eventually stealing the portrait of Kurt Angle, among other things. So, you know, I also think this eventually led them to stealing the medals as well. And was part of their just great feud that they had with Team Angle. And these two teams would just put on classic after classic as far as tag team contests. And this is no different. This is just an absolutely wonderful match. Probably one of the best parts of it is everything leading up to the hot tag by Eddie to Chavo. And everything is just really solid, and it's just really smooth with this match. And it's really, really incredible. And I would watch this pay-per-view again just for this match. That's how good this tag team contest is. It's just a really, really solid and great bout. Our next match is Sean O'Hare with Roddy Piper versus Rikishi. Now, starting off, we have to talk about the storyline. Is that the whole storyline with this feud going on? This was in between, I want to say it was WrestleMania 19, and of course when Mr. America would debut. I can't remember, when did he debut? Did he debut? He debuted in May or June. I can't remember. But anyways, this was sort of the feud that killed that time towards that, of them bringing Hogan back as Mr. America, which, I don't know about you, I thoroughly enjoyed Mr. America. In particular, that lie detector test. Anyways, but the whole storyline going here was, of course, Rikishi is, you know, his uncle is Jimmy Snooperfly Snuka, so of course, you know, Roddy Piper, we're bringing out the coconuts. And of course, that little payoff there towards at the end of the match where, you know, he hit Piper in the head with a coconut was, I think, and that was just, again, WWE reaching back into its, you know, history and bringing something that will always make fans feel good. Because, you know, that moment where Piper hit Superfly with the coconut, it's just one of those villainous things that always stands out. And regardless of whether you like Piper or didn't, whether he's a good guy or not, it's always fun to see him. Especially when he's playing a villain, it's always good to see him get his comeuppance over and over and over again for that just heinous attack that he did all those years ago. That being said, this is, I think, was just a solid match, and I think it showed Sean O'Hare in a good way. I think him and Rikishi just put on a really solid match, considering they pretty much only had 5 minutes. I don't know if it's a pay-per-view quality match, but it would definitely make a solid SmackDown match. And Hero sort of, again, continuing the storyline. It's bringing up a newbie in Sean O'Hare. And of course, that finisher, that sort of reverse fireman's carry called the Widowmaker. I always really liked that finisher because I love the spin aspect of it, and I think visually it's a wonderful move. So a really solid match, and again building everything here up very well for this pay-per-view. Our next match is for the World Tag Team Championship with Chief Morley, a.k.a. Val Venus, as the special guest referee, as RVD and Kane face the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and Devon Dudley for the Tag Team Championship. This was just a great match all around. Again, it's one of those matches where you look at the time, like, it's 13 minutes, but 13 minutes and 1 second. But it's like, wow, that was 13 minutes? It seemed to go by so fast. And it's like, so much action, so much happened, it seemed shorter than it was, which is a good thing, mind you. This match was just total nonstop action, which is much more than TNA can say. Ooh, and that joke doesn't really work anymore because it's just one person. But still, total non-stop action, just great back and forth, and great storytelling by the Dudleys. In regards to, of course, the storyline, which, you know, Eric Bischoff and Chief Morley, of course, the Dictators, they were one of the tag team champions on their side. RVD and Kane wouldn't play nice, so they were trying to strip the titles from them, and, you know, the Dudleys be given ultimatums to attack people to keep their jobs, and Bubba was willing to do it, but Devon wasn't, and was there a rift between the Dudley Boys? And, of course, Chief Morley screwed everything up in this match by accidentally attacking Bubba, which led to the Dudley Boys saying, "The hell would you?" You know, and attacking Morley, attacking Lindstorm, gives the 3D to Morley. Devon gets thrown out of the ring, and of course, RVD hits the 5-star frog splash, I believe after a chokeslam on Bubba. They pick up the 1-2-3 and remain your World Tag Team Champions. By the way, I kind of forgot to mention with the first match, Team Angle wins. Again, part of that storyline was they win, then this wonderful maneuver by Eddie where Eddie, like, sort of backdrops Chavo over the rope onto Team Angle, onto the Angle picture, and then they steal the titles and ride out with a lowrider, which is just a classic image and classic Los Guerreros. So both tag teams in this case retain. And again, this is just a fun match and just really enjoyable to watch. Again, if you're an ECW fan, this was just an absolutely fun match to watch. And again, you had RVD and you had the Dudley Boys. Our next match was a solid match for the time it was given as well, just like the Sean O'Hare-Rikishi match. For the WWE Women's Championship, you had Trish Stratus versus Jazz. with Theater Long. I find it funny that every time I seemingly watch a Trish Stratus Jazz match, or at least I have watched one, it seems like Jazz is always beating Trish Stratus. I know Trish Stratus has beat Jazz, but I would like to see the win-loss record of Trish Stratus versus Jazz, because I'm willing to bet I think Jazz actually has more wins over Trish Stratus than anybody and has the better record against her. That would be very interesting too, because I think Jazz is a very underestimated Divas competitor. I think there's a lot of Divas competitors during this time frame of 2001 to 2004, 2005 that are very underlooked. Jazz, Victoria, Jacqueline, you know, had a, I think a refresher as a wrestler at this time. I'm trying to think. Molly Holly was one. And these Divas would put on great matches, even if they only had 5 minutes. And, you know, it's sort of the disconnect I have with the current Divas division and how they complain they don't have enough time. I don't think it's that they have enough time. I just think that they're too slow in the ring. You know, for that matter, Sean O'Hare and Rikishi had 5 minutes, basically, and yet they put on a really solid match. Same as here. This was just a great back and forth. Trish told a great story with her injury and everything. And it was great back and forth. And, of course, the great heel maneuver by Jazz to defeat using the ropes to steal the title. It just was great back and forth. And we're only in a time frame of 5 minutes and 50 seconds. So 6 minutes, almost, if you round it up. And, you know, still, it just told a great story and was a very, very solid and very good match. Certainly, I understand the aspect of if they had more time, they could put on a classic match. And certainly, I think it's very hard to do a classic match in the modern age in only 5 minutes. But that doesn't mean you can't put on a good match. And I think, while I do think Divas should get hashtag give Divas a chance, I do believe in that, I also believe that you can't convince people unless you put on match after match after solid match after solid match after entertaining match after entertaining match. And I think part of the problems with the Divas division, as I sort of step back, and I continue to watch these matches, the whole matches over and over again, is that they're not quick enough. I think that's something that will pick up as some of the NXT Divas will come in, and if they are given a chance, like Charlotte, like Sasha Banks, I think Alexa Bliss is one that will definitely step things up, who's still very green, but as she continues to work, I think in a year, she's going to be a top-notch diva, and I think those high-flying moves will set her apart. Donna, I'm blanking on her last name, but the one who I keep saying is like, I want her to be the next Mrs. Thomas Mattis, who remind, you know, just that instant Trish Stratus feel to her being a fitness model and just looking damn good in the bikini, which I thank you, WWE, for. showing those fitness contests. Looks damn good, and if she can perform in the ring as good as she looks, now, she's definitely going to be a player in the future. The Divas division, and we always talk about this when we talk about women's wrestling, which I think is unfair to this match, because like I said, this was just a great match. Again, it's Jazz and Trish Stratus, and as I said, their rivalry, I think, is very underrated. You know, of course, because of the rivalry of Trish and Lita, that gets so much more notice. Because, again, they main evented Raw, and there's just so much, and it's this great contrast of styles, and they're two of the best divas, without a doubt, that wrestled for the Women's Championship in the WWE. But I also think just as good is that rivalry with Jazz, because I think Jazz was just a terrific wrestler. Again, ECW alumni, had a very solid wrestling foundation, was just a really good wrestler. And I don't think Jazz gets enough respect. And this match, I think, really highlights she was a really good heel. And she didn't need to be sexy. She didn't need a gimmick to do it. She was a heel because she was a badass. And she could whoop your ass. And sometimes that's all you need, a heel. She was kind of Kevin Owens, in a way. Before Kevin Owens was Kevin Owens. Or I should say, before Kevin Steen was Kevin Steen. I mean, she was, that was her feel. She was a badass. And you hated her because, you know, she was the villain. And she would sometimes use cheap maneuver. But you couldn't argue the fact that she was a great wrestler. So, this was, I think, a very underrated match. And I think it's a very solid match. And I very much enjoy it. Jazz and Trish just have very fluid motion in it. And I just think it works so well in this match. And despite the little rant I went on, give the Divas a chance. And I think I would like to see Divas go back and watch some old matches like this and see that they have to step up their speed. Because, you know, even though they had 5 minutes and 50 seconds, this match felt like it had 10 minutes of content because they were constantly moving around, they were constantly doing holds, they were constantly doing something. They weren't just sitting there waiting, playing to the crowd, because when you do that, that's when things go by quickly, and that sort of breaks the spell. You know, when you are wrestling in that ring, you know, you're performing, in a way, you're doing illusion. You're performing magic. Because when you're constantly moving, you're having constant action, again, like I said, it makes it seem like there's more content in that match, and like the match goes longer than it really is. Whereas when you sit back and you're doing nothing, that makes people realize how long things are going, and that can turn the bad way to where something feels like it's 20 minutes long when it's 10 minutes long, or 10 minutes long when it's 5 minutes long, but it's that bad type of, oh my god, when will this match end? But it also can make the match just seem quick, and it breaks that illusion. So, that's a lot to sit here and say that Jazz and Trish Edwards was a very solid match that I very much enjoyed watching. My rant of the night, folks. But yeah, definitely I would highly suggest watching this match, because again, that Jazz Trish Stratus feud is just classic. Our next match had a lot in it, and it even had even shorter time. It was about only 3 minutes and 47 seconds, so if you round up 4 minutes, which is 2 minutes less than, and it's actually 2 minutes less than the Jazz Trish Stratus match. That is Big Show versus Rey Mysterio. Again, also probably a part of it, again, is entrance, along with, again, things that happen after the match. And mind you, we reviewed Judgment Day 2003 last year, and so this is the match that was part of that storyline of Brock Lesnar versus Big Show in a stretcher match, in which he tried to kill him with a forklift. Huzzah! But if you remember, the whole point was, you know, what Big Show did to Rey. Well, this is the match where it happened. And this was just a classic battle of, you know, big and strength versus small and speed. And Rey Mysterio looked awesome in it. I love the, you know, I know T-Dub, my dear friend, hates the 619. But I personally love the 619. And I love how the 619 was used in different angles here to chop them down and everything towards the end of the match. I loved how it showed the intelligence of Rey, how he tried to attack him. But when Big Show would catch him, it would stop. And then that finisher where, you know, Rey's going through all the 619s, he goes for the West Coast Pop, and he gets caught in the throat. And then Big Show just lifts him up 10 feet in the air, slams him down. You believe that Rey is out. And it's like, it's a solid, even though I hate that Rey, because I'm a huge Rey Mysterio fan, and I hate that Rey lost, it was just a great, solid match. And then, of course, the storytelling afterwards, and just that wicked, wicked maneuver where, you know, Rey, who's being looked after, is being strapped to the gurdy, the orange gurdy, and then Big Show comes, throws him away, picks up the gurdy, slams it against the post. It's like, damn. And then Rey, just, of course, after adjusting his mask, which I can forgive, Just acting knocked out. It's like just great storytelling overall. Mine is a sort of a slight adjustment that sort of break kayfabe there. But a solid match, but even better storytelling throughout it. And again, it's like one of those things where this match felt longer in that good way. It's like you have so much content that... And again, I think that's a better way to sit here and say it. Is there's two types of way to make a match feel longer. There's a good way and a bad way. The good way is you fill it with so much content that it's like, wow, this was only this long? And then there's that match that's just slow and takes... feels like it's taking a time. It's like you're checking your watch, like, is it over yet? Is it over yet? It's like, oh, this must have been 10 minutes. Like, what? It was only 5? You gotta be shitting me. And thankfully, in this pay-per-view, for the most part, all the matches I've talked about have had that after effect to where it's like, you know, pretty much all the matches have not seemed as long as they were because they had so much content, so it's a good thing. This match, next match, mind you, however, I don't know which category to put it in on that one, though. Because it was a very enjoyable match. It was a very fun match to watch. But this is where I think the rails kind of start to fall off on this pay-per-view. Because so far, we've had a really good, solid pay-per-view. But for the next three matches, starting with this next match, there are little things in the matches that I felt hurt the matches overall. And they all have to do with, again, what I've been talking about before, with content. And, you know, again, I've talked about sort of the content about the nonstop action, making things seem longer than they are, only because there's so much content that you're just fully entertained all the way through, and it makes it seem longer than it is, or in some cases shorter than it is, when it's really fun. But then there's... And I've also talked about the fluidity. And all the matches so far had just had this constant fluidity and good chemistry with all the wrestlers. So even where there is a botch, it's not as noticeable, and they recover really good. With these next matches, there is a loss of fluidity. There's a loss, not so much of chemistry, but I think of connection with the story they're trying to tell. And some clusterfucking. Let's start off with the first match. Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. Of course, this is John Cena, still heel John Cena. He had only recently made the jump, about, let's say, 5-6 months ago to... You know, the Doctor of Thuganomics. Of course, it's always awesome to hear John Cena curse. Which, again, is a product of the current time. Because it's like that time, like, you're begging, like, please, Cena, just curse just once. Please say ass. Please say ass. Please say bitch. which is sad. But, you know, it's fun to see the Doctor of Thuganomics again. You know what? For 90% of this match, this was a really good match, and it was really entertaining, and it was really fun to see John Cena taking charge, to see John Cena as a heel. I thought he did a great job as portraying that heel, and these are my personal favorite heels. The heels that you just hate them, you hate their personality, and they do take cheap shots, but it's that thing to where they're not necessarily doing anything wrong. They're a great wrestler. You just hate them because they're obnoxious. I love those heels. I think that was the heel that John Cena was portraying to stand out. And eventually that's what got him his fan base. To where at next year's WrestleMania, he had the entire New York crowd cheering for him. Which may have been the last time an entire New York crowd would ever be cheering for him. But the problem with this match is Brock Lesnar. And I think this is something with Brock Lesnar. You know, Brock Lesnar has put on some just amazing matches for the WWE, like this past year's WrestleMania, like his Extreme Rules fight with John Cena a couple years ago, the match with Big Show on SmackDown, the stretcher match with Big Show at Judgment Day 2003. I mean, the 60-minute Iron match with Kurt Angle would also happen in this year. He had a lot of good matches in this year, mind you. Of course, unfortunately, Goldberg. His match with Goldberg at the following WrestleMania is in front of him. Sadly, as much as I wish it would have been. But we've talked about that before. But the flip side of it is sometimes I think Lesnar, I don't know whether it's losing interest or just... So especially during this time, an inability to tell a story or lose track of the story. And he does things that are just weird. For instance, the ending of this match is, you know, he hits John Cena with an F5. Now, normally, in the case of finishing a match, you would stay down and then roll over for the cover. Even if you pick up a leg and you pick it up, it's like, you want that pin cover to be fast. You know, to make it believable, you've hit this power move. And yeah, it's a power move that knocks people out. But you know what? That becomes unbelievable when you pop up, your leg hits the ropes, you look around, take some tea and everything, and then you sort of lay down and cover the guy. And yet he's still like lying there like, I'm knocked out. That's the break in the illusion. And that's what happened here. Is he pops up, he's laying back against the ropes, looking at everybody like, I just did that, as he's blood and everything, looking like he's not hurt at all, breaks the illusion of the injury, of the beating that John Cena gave him. And yes, I know he's a beast, but it's still... You know, John Cena took it to him, and it would have been much more believable. He could still, like, you know, just, like, hit the F5, now sit up, and then maybe point to the crowd, and then, you know, like... Or pop up straight up and like, or do something, but be quicker about it. He took way too much time here, and particularly during the build up to it, he would take too much time in between moves. He didn't sell it right in my mind, and it kind of hurt it. It kind of hurt that ending because it was a really solid match. John Cena really showcased that he was an up and coming superstar, and that he could run with the big boys. It's Brock Lesnar, and sometimes it just seems like maybe he lost a bit of interest towards the end of the match. I was like, well, let's just, you know, run through the gambit to get it over with. And it kind of hurts the match. Now, it's not deplorable. I mean, it's just a few instances that break the illusion. It's not as bad as the next two matches and what they do. Because this is still a good match, still a solid match. I really enjoy it. John Cena told a great story. I think overall, Lesnar was really solid in the match, despite him, his mistakes that he makes at the end of it. But I think it was a good contest for Lesnar, and I thought it was a good showing of two of WWE's Young Bucks. Because again, during this time, they really did need to showcase their Young Bucks. Because Raw was showing a lot of the older guys, a lot of the veterans, as with the main event. So definitely, despite my issues with Lesnar, particularly during the end of the match, the build up to it, and you know him just popping up and sitting up against the ropes, like, and again, understand, it's not that, like, now, he'll hit the F5, pop up, and just sit there like, yeah. But it's the match of, like, he pops up, he acts like he's dazed and like he's injured and everything. And he's like, but he takes too long with it. And just, it's almost as if he's sitting there taking tea. Like, oh, what should I do? It's like he forgot to go for the pin. And it was so much time that it just made Cena staying down unbelievable. Like, what should have happened there? Cena should have kicked out. Like, well, Cena popped out of the F5. I guess I'm going to have to hit it with him again. And then maybe, you know, Cena pops out and he tries to go for the FU again. And then Lesnar counters, hits the F5, and then go for the pin. That, I think, would have made it better than, again, what they did. Because it's just it's that slight loss in the illusion. But outside of that, a really, really good match. And I think if you're a Lesnar fan, more importantly, I think if you're a Cena fan, you definitely should watch this match because it definitely is an important part of John Cena's rise in the WWE, because it's definitely one of those first moments where Cena showed, I can run with the big boys. And he would have a couple of those moments throughout this year. The biggest, I think, personally, though, being at the following Survivor Series, which we reviewed before, where he helped cause the pin of Lesnar and of Big Show, in particular the F-U-ing of the Big Show. Our next match is a six-man tag. And if you played WWE 2K15, you would have seen this contest because you would have had to play it as part of Shawn and Triple H's story mode. As Triple H, Ric Flair, and Chris Jericho face Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash, and Booker T in a six-man tag. Now, with this many stars, this many good stars and good veterans, you would think, you have Chris Jericho and you have Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Ric Flair, and Booker T was like in this prime at this time. The only question really should have been Kevin Nash, but there just seemed to be a lot of disjointed, because again, the problem here is that you had all these different storylines that kind of were involved. They were involved, but at the same point in time, throwing them all together for a six-man tag actually kind of disjointed the stories and meddled them up. And for the most part, it's a solid match. It's a six-man tag, but there's a couple times here and there it gets kind of clusterfucky. And it's like, what is it leading to? And it's... It's like the solid moment was, Shawn Michaels being the one trapped and having to get for a tag. And that was really the good part of the tag match. But once Kevin Nash comes in, they should have sped up and really ended it towards there. This is a match that I think I would like to see when Kevin Nash came in, because it seemed like they did an extra... It had to be at least an extra 3 minutes of the match. Because they're setting up towards that end, and he's got Triple H, and face everything, and then people interfere, and all of a sudden everybody tumbles out to the outside, and Kevin Nash is beating on Triple H, and Booker T and Jericho are off the one side. I'm expecting, okay, so Booker T's going to whip Jericho into the stairs, but Jericho's going to counter it and whip Booker T into the stairs, but that doesn't happen. It's like... It got all confusing. And if... I get the ending. I actually like the ending of Triple H having to use a sledgehammer to beat Kevin Nash. And again, that part I actually enjoyed and I like. For all these three main events, I do actually enjoy... Well, with the exception of Lesnar and Cena, but again, it's not that I didn't like Lesnar going over on Cena. It's that I thought with how he told that end, again, I've talked about this essentially already, but him leaning up against the ropes and everything, they should have restarted that, have Cena kick out and then do counter into the F5 for the finish because he took too long, or done the pin quicker. But either way, here, it was just too much going on, too much clusterfucking, and this was a match that went on longer than it... This match felt like it was 17 minutes, or in this case, 17 minutes, 51 seconds, so rounded up, this match felt like it was 18 minutes, and it should have been 15 minutes. 15, 14, because at the point that Triple H and Kevin Nash came in, that's when they should have, started racing towards that finish of Triple H getting the sledgehammer and having to cheat to win. And all that stuff that happened on the outside and everything just bogged the match down. I mean, you could have had it to where Kevin Nash was going for the powerbomb, Flair, Jericho come in. That's when Michaels and Booker T come in and they hit... And then that whole thing to where one person hits the finish and another and... It leads to, Kevin Nash going for the powerbomb. He hits Jericho with it, and that's when Triple H hits him with the... And again, I'm basing this on what I've seen before. I think that would have been a much more solid, maybe a bit more predictable, but still much more solid, and would have, I think, flowed better than what we got. So it's okay, but I think this is definitely the worst match of the night by far. That being said, this being the worst match of the night, I think shows you how actually good this pay-per-view is. Because this is not an absolutely horrible match by any means. It's a solid match, it's just, it gets too clusterfucky. That brings us to another match, speaking of matches that went a bit longer than it should have. We have our main event of the evening, as we have The Rock versus Bill Goldberg. Now, the match itself I actually enjoyed. I enjoyed it a little bit, but this is the second worst match of the night, and I hate saying that. But again, it comes from some of the same problems. Well, some of the same problems and some different problems. The same problem in the fact that I think the match went too long. I love the entrances and everything. And I thought, wrestling-wise, they were a great job. It was just a bit too slow. And I felt it went on longer. I think, again, it's that matter of... And I think, you know, in watching some of these matches in 2003 with Bill Goldberg... Because I, of course, watch other stuff on the WWE Network. Besides stuff I'm reviewing. You know, I almost get the feeling of watching his matches. You know, I actually haven't seen his match with Jericho yet, but I definitely want to watch that. But in watching his match with Lesnar, watching the match with Triple H, watching the match with The Rock, you know, his competitors are slower than him. It seems like he wants to quicken up the pace, but the WWE style doesn't want to let him. And I think it's due to fear, like they don't want him to, you know, because they see his weakness as he can't do longer matches, and so they wanted to have these long, drawn-out contests for him. But sometimes you just have to appeal to the strength of a wrestler. And, you know, you can have these long matches, but there has to be a lot of speed in it to make up. You have to put so much content. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of content in his matches, and I don't think that's due to Goldberg. I think that's due to how they're having the other wrestlers portrayed. Case in point, The Rock. I don't know where. And also, The Rock's character comes into question, I think, in this match, because I don't know whether The Rock is incredibly just an absolute genius in how he portrays his character, or whether he was on fucking speed. Because in one instance, it seems like he's just portraying a heel. He's the Brahma Bull who's now a big-time, big-shot movie star. And it's sort of the same problem I had with his character when I reviewed WrestleMania 20, mind you. But just like antsy everywhere, like, I'm The Rock. I was like, I kept thinking, like, you know, maybe Rock, maybe you should have your script on your arm. Because if this is what we're going to get, if it isn't, maybe it's okay for you to use that Sharpie. That being said, because it's like it's dancing on that line between incredibly genius and incredibly stupid. And I don't know which it falls into. But I kind of lean towards wondering what it is also because it also leads to how he's acting in the ring, and he's just dancing around, and again, it's that fine line between incredibly genius and incredibly stupid. It's, in one instance, it's genius to tell this great character to the big show, like, oh, look what I did! I don't believe I'm going to sit here and say this, but the way he danced around the ring made me think he was Eugene for a moment. Because literally, it was like, look what I did! I did a good thing! Well, good for you, Rock. Here, let me get you a WWE ice cream bar. And here, while you're at it, why don't you put on this yellow helmet? Because you're gonna need... I love that Goldberg used two spears. I do love the ending of the match. I love that, you know, what was it, three or four spears he hit him. Well, No, it was three spears. Because he goes for a spear, misses the first time. So he goes for four spears, hits three. That part I like. It's that middle part where the Rock's in control, where I think the... Again, this is why I think it's on the Rock, because I think the Rock took too much time. He should have been on Goldberg, and it didn't feel like they have... Unlike Cena versus Rock, where in both matches, they both had that sort of feeling, like they were both just throwing haymakers, and they were both constantly on each other, and there was some type of constant action. Here, it, you know, it felt like Rock was taking too much time to dance around, and he was playing that character just a bit too much. And it's that middle part, which I think could have been compacted and taken time from. And I think if you cut 3 minutes off this match, cut 3 minutes off that part of the match, and having The Rock constantly beating down on Goldberg, and then he hits that spear out of nowhere, and then you struggle, and then you build up towards that second spear that Goldberg hits, and The Rock's down, gasping in the air, and because I love that part where Goldberg hits that second spear, and he looks at The Rock, and he's like, I can go for it now. Before I pose the regret, no, I'm going to go for another one, because I want... That mate was believable that Goldberg wanted to fucking kill The Rock and go for that third spear. And then he hits that spear. It's like, yeah, motherfucker, this is Goldberg. And then he poses like, it's Jackhammer time, bitch. Yes, I'm maybe a bit partial to Goldberg because I am a Jew. And my fellow Jews have to, you know, stick together. But it is a thing to like, you watch that match and if you really break down this match, it's not Goldberg's fault. And I think that's something that, again, like I said, I find fault with people's perception of his run in 2003 that it was Goldberg's fault and Goldberg couldn't adjust to the WWE style. But I think it's the WWE and some of the wrestlers who couldn't adjust and to a more faster-paced style that was more entertaining at the time. That's why SmackDown was the better show during this period, because it would showcase a lot more action by being faster in general. I think the Raw brand and a lot of Raw matches would sometimes take too much time. And I think it's showcased here. Goldberg definitely had that speed. And I would have loved to see Goldberg on SmackDown, but they wanted to showcase Goldberg facing off with the bigger stars, who at the time were on Raw. I mean, goddamn it, I would have loved to have seen Goldberg versus Kurt Angle. I mean, could you have imagined that match in 2003? Kurt Angle at his peak, Goldberg at his peak. My God. I mean, just saying that puts butts in seats. And you know what? This is a solid match for what it is. Again, there's a reason it's the second worst match of the card. And again, this second worst match of the card, it's still entertaining. I think it's still worth the main event. It's not completely disappointing, but it's just, again, it's The Rock not at his best. And that's the problem. And so again, taking a bit too much time and The Rock not being the best hurts this match. So, with that being said, time to do the rundown of the final parts. Before I give my final verdict on this pay-per-view. So top three moments. Number three, Goldberg hitting that third spear and that jackhammer, because it's just, you know, I'm a kid again from, it's like, it's 19, you know. If I had been watching in 98, I would have been able to sit here and say that I was a kid again going back to 1998. But since I was a person who only watched those 98 matches later, like actually on YouTube around the same time this happened, it was more like I'm a kid again back in 2002 watching Goldberg versus Raven. So Goldberg spear and jackhammer, the ending of the Goldberg Rock match, is number three. Number two is Rikishi hitting Piper with the coconut. Okay, that's just fun to watch. But my number one is the after-match antics of Team Angle and Los Guerreros with the assisted body drop over the ropes, or should I say assisted backdrop body splash of Chavo Guerrero onto Team Angle by Eddie, and them stealing the titles and riding off in a lowrider. Mind you, something I didn't make mention of is that throughout this pay-per-view, they keep doing these backstage segments, because there's this backstage story of, I want to say it was after Sean O'Hare. No, it was before Sean O'Hare and Rikishi. To where there's this whole segment to where, you know, Test is trying to hit on Tori, and Tori's like, no, you're dating my friend Stacy. And, like, Test forces himself on her. And it was continuing two storylines at once. One was sort of the tension between, you know, I want to say TNA, but no, between Test and Scott Steiner and Stacey Keever, and that storyline that was going on Raw, and then, of course, also the storyline that was going on between Sable and Tori, because as she walks away, out comes Sable, looking goddamn fine, and again, how the fuck did Brock Lesnar nail that? Fuck. Goddamn. Things that make you want to throw yourself off a fucking bridge, I tell you. I just can't believe it. I was like, fuck me. Well, I would love Sable to fuck me, but fuck me in the bad way. Wait, that didn't come out right. Anyway, you have to get mind off wanting to fuck Sable. but you'll see that, and then, like, tells a lie to Stacy in the, like, lunchroom commentator. Not commentator, but it's a C word. Can't remember it, but whatever room they set up for where the table with food is, which leads to her confronting Tori in the women's locker room, a catfight happens, and then there's a catfight later, in which Tori subs Stacy, she gets injured as Tori walks away, and Scott Steiner picks her up, and, you know, Tess comes, and of course they fight, and, like, all this bad, and it was all building towards the story. It was like, it was really, they were segments to, you know, that were to be sandwiched in between the matches, and something that would happen throughout the night. And you know what? Again, storytelling, I didn't really talk about it because it really had no bearing on the match, and I don't think it hurts, but I don't think it helped the pay-per-view. But they were moments that I think bear mentioning, but, I could mention Sable's dress. Oh, that Sable-Tori storyline. Next month I'm going to be rewatching Judgment Day 2000. I'm not going to be reviewing it, because I've already reviewed it. But, you know. I am absolutely sure that new Jerry Springer WWE Too Hot for TV show, I am damn sure that is going to be on that show. Anyways, as far as the top three matches, it's kind of hard. Number three, I would say Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, even despite sort of, again, Lesnar's deficiencies at the end of this match, it's still a really good, really solid heavyweight bout. And that just showcased why I thought SmackDown was the better show. In fact, two of these three matches are going to be SmackDown shows. Number two, the World Tag Team title match of RVD and Kane versus the Dudleys. And number one is, again, Team Angle versus Los Guerreros. Just an absolutely outstanding contest. And a match I will... one of the matches that will cause me to watch this pay-per-view again. Because this was, I thought, a really solid pay-per-view. As I go into my final thoughts on this, this pay-per-view had a great undercard. I thought the three main events were all solid enough to, you know, earn their spot as main events. Definitely these main events sold seats by name only. But I don't think they lived up to their hype. But it wasn't like an, oh my god, I was robbed type of didn't live up to the hype. But it's like, the execution caused them not to live up to their hype. In particular, those last two matches that went too long. I think the six-man tag could have been cleaned up and been a bit more traditional, and it would have been better. And then, of course, you know, with the final match, shortened and sped up the action a bit more, and you'd have a much better match, and we'd have a much harder, I think, decision here, deciding what would be the better match of the night. That being said, it's a solid pay-per-view. It didn't, you know, sometimes backlashes, as we may see in the future, because again, depending on what I think of next week's backlash, can feature, you know, not lowering your standard, but like sort of reduction in quality from WrestleMania, and some don't. And this is one of those that, you know what, it may not have been, again, I haven't seen WrestleMania 19, so maybe that's something I'll have to decide in the future, and may change my thoughts on this backlash, but from just seeing this backlash, definitely kept that momentum that WWE had started to gain as part of the new Ruthless Aggression era. That was 2003. Because again, this is that firm, this is the early part of that Ruthless Aggression era. You know, I've talked about before, mid-2002 to, I would say, WrestleMania 20. Is the early Ruthless Aggression, and then from WrestleMania 20 to, where would I put it? I would put to at least WrestleMania 23, but sometime after, like, what was it? 2007 to 2008. Maybe I'll say 2005 was the start of it. Anyways, I don't want to get into specifics here, because that's a story that I've talked about before, and I don't want to waste it any more time. So, overall, I'd give Backlash 2003 I want to say a 3 out of, I'm kind of cross here, because in one instance, I want to give it 3.5, but I also want to give it a 3.5. So, you know what? I'll give it a 3.5 because, you know, at the end of the day, as much as I have a problem with those last three matches needing to clean themselves up, they were still solid matches. And at the end of the day, like I said, this is just a solid pay-per-view. I found it really enjoyable. Some really enjoyable matches. And in fact, I think are a good showcase of sort of what made WWE good in 2003. So, 3.5 out of 5 for me. And that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, if you have any comments or emails or anything, there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact the show by leaving us a comment on our Stitcher account, which you can find by going to www.stitcher.com. You can listen to the show there and leave us a comment there. And of course, I need to get working on updating it again, because I just keep getting behind on that. You can also leave us a comment on Facebook by going to Facebook and searching for The Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, while you're there, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum and, of course, the Anicast with Relic. You have, of course, Shin Tiger Girls Wrestling and anime and video gaming videos. You have Jan Ramos's Toku and like voice acting videos and everything. And of course, all my other stuff, which of course includes Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10, which at some point I'm going to get to. I should have gotten to a couple more in February, but or March for that matter, but, you know. But of course, the Intergalactic Graphic Review, which I still have to get onto that. There's so much stuff to do. But yeah, I have more stuff coming out for that. It's going to be hard. It's finals season, so I do apologize in advance for stuff getting out. But check out all that stuff and more right here on the Absolution Network. Of course, don't forget my other stuff, which of course includes Comic Book Crazy podcasting site featuring Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, while you're at any of the sites, make sure you check out all our friends on the side of the site. This, of course, includes TWK and Maddie J and the WrestleCast. I actually have to get to getting their Podomatic site into the link. And of course, when RVT Entertainment pop back up, I'll have that link there as well when they get their new site. But of course, also Michael Bailey, Infused from Wombox, Spidey Dude and the Clone Sucker Chronicles, Steven Schleicher and the Critical Hit Podcast, and of course, Scott Gunner and the Tutu Freaks Podcasting Network. And that is it for this episode of CM Juice Wrestling Reviews. Next week, we go a couple years in the future as we take a look at the night after WrestleMania 22. We take a look at the night that John Cena faced Edge and Triple H in a triple threat match, and we take a look at the night that Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon faced Shawn Michaels and God. Or as Michael PSA has put it, in the WWE Countdown episode, talking about this match, when Vince apparently conceived of the idea over the Atlantic Ocean. Could you wait till we were out of God's backyard till you think of this stuff? Oh, I love Michael PSAs. So yes, next week we review Backlash 2006. And until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you, yes I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes I believe, I say that I believe. Stand among the feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. How the darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my might. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holy in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but you're free.